our lot. And some suffer more, not necessarily by choice. The point is not the bearing of suffering. The point is how it is borne.
Yanka, dear Yanka.
Take this hunchbacked monstrosity from me. I don't want to look at it.
She's your daughter as much as she is mine.
Indeed. The children I have sired are normal.
How dare you? How dare you suggest?
It was in your elven family that there were witches. It was you that aborted your first pregnancy. It was because of that. You have tainted elven blood and a tainted womb, woman. That's why you give birth to monsters.
It is an ill-fated child. Such was the will of the gods. She's your daughter as much as she is mine. What was I to do? Smother her? Not tie the birth cord? What am I to do now? Take her to the forest and leave her? What do you want from me, by the gods? Daddy! Mummy!
Get away, you freak!
How dare you? How dare you strike a child? Stop! Where are you going? Where? To her, are you? To her?
Yes, woman. I'm a man. I'm free to seek my lust where and when I want, as is my natural right. And I loathe you. You and the fruit of your degenerate womb. Don't wait with supper. I won't be back tonight.
Mummy. Why are you weeping? Why are you beating me and pushing me away? I was good, wasn't I? Mummy. Dear Mummy.
Are you capable of forgiveness?
I forgave long ago,
having first satisfied your lust for vengeance.
Yes?
Do you regret it?
No.
Pain, searing pain in her mutilated hands and fingers.
Yes, I'm guilty. Is that what you want to hear? A confession and remorse? You want to hear Yennefer of Vengerberg grovel and abase herself? No, I won't give you that pleasure. I admit my guilt and await my punishment, but you will not hear my remorse.
The pain reached the limits of what a person can withstand.
You blame me for the betrayed, the deceived, the abused. You blame me for those who died, because of me, from their own hand, from my hand. For once having raised a hand against myself? You could see I had my reasons. And I regret nothing. Even if I could take back time, I regret nothing.
The falcon alighted on her shoulder.
The Tower of the Swallow. The Tower of the Swallow. Hurry to the Tower of the Swallow, oh daughter.
The cock, Cambi, crows. Ciri on a black mare at a gallop, her ashen hair tousled by the wind. Blood sprays from her face, a vivid, intense red. The black mare soars like a bird, smoothly gliding over the top rail of a high gate. Ciri sways in the saddle, but doesn't fall off. Ciri amidst the night, amidst a stony, sandy wilderness with a raised arm. A glowing ball explodes from her hand. A unicorn churning up gravel with its hoof. Many unicorns. Fire. Fire. Geralt on a bridge. In combat. Amidst fire. A flame reflected in his blade. Fringilla Vigo. Her green eyes wide open in sexual ecstasy, her close-cropped head on an open book on the frontispiece. Part of the title is visible. Remarks on inevitable death. Geralt's eyes reflected in Fringilla's. A chasm. Smoke. Steps leading downwards. Steps that must be descended. Something is ending. Tedh Daireth. The time of the end is nigh. Darkness. dampness, the dreadful cold of stone walls, the cold of iron on wrists, on ankles, pain pulsing in mutilated hands, shooting down crushed fingers. Ciri takes her by the hand. A long, dark corridor. Stone columns, perhaps statues. Darkness. In it. Whispers, soft as the soughing of the wind. A door. Endless doors with gigantic, heavy leaves open before them without a murmur. And finally, in the impenetrable darkness, a door which does not open by itself, which it is forbidden to open.
If you are afraid, turn back. It is forbidden to open this door. You know that. I do. But yet you are leading me there. If you are afraid, turn back. There is still time to turn back. It is not yet too late. And you? For me it is. The cock Cambi is crowing. Tedd Daireadh has come. The aurora borealis. Dawn.
Yennefer, wake up. She jerked her head up. She glanced down at her hands. She had both of them. Intact.
Sigurdrifa, I fell asleep. Come. Where to?
She whispered.
Where to this time? I beg your pardon. I don't understand. Come. You must see it. Something has happened. Something strange. None of us knows how to explain it. But I can guess. Grace. The goddess has bestowed her grace on you, Yennefer.
What do you mean, Sigurdrifa?
Look.
She looked and sighed aloud. Brisingamen, the sacred jewel of Modron Freya, was no longer hanging around the goddess's neck. It was lying at her feet.
Did I hear that correctly? Krachan Kreid asked. You're moving to Hindarsfjall with your magical workshop. The priestesses will make the sacred diamond available to you. They'll let you use it in your infernal machine.
Yes.
Well, well, Yennefer. Have you perhaps had a conversion? What happened on the island?
Never you mind. I'm returning to the temple, and that's that.
And the financial resources you asked for, will they still be necessary?
I'd say so.
Seneschal Guthlaf will carry out each of your relevant instructions. But, Yennefer, issue them quickly. Make haste. I've received fresh tidings.
Damn it. I was afraid of that. Do they know where I am?
No, not yet. I was warned, though, that you may appear on Skellige, and was ordered to imprison you immediately. I was also ordered to take prisoners on my expeditions and extract information from them, even if it was only scraps concerning you and your sojourn in Nilfgaard or in the provinces. Yennefer, hurry. If they tracked you and caught you here on Skellige, I would find myself in a somewhat difficult situation.
I'll do everything in my power, including whatever it takes to avoid compromising you. Don't worry.
Krach grinned.
I said somewhat. I'm not afraid of them. Not of kings, nor of sorcerers. They can't do anything to me, because they need me. And I was bound to help you by a feudal oath. Yes, yes, you heard right. I'm still formally a vassal of the Sintran Crown, and Cirilla has formal rights to that crown. By representing Cirilla, by being her sole guardian, you have the formal right to give me orders, demand obedience and servitudes.
Causistic sophistries.
Well, certainly, he snorted. I will shout as much myself in a booming voice, if in spite of everything it turns out Emir Var Imris really has forced the girl to marry. Also, if, by the help of some legal loopholes and flourishes, Ciri has been deprived of the right to the throne, and someone else has been named as a substitute heir, including that lummox Visigerd, then I'll announce my obedience and declare my feudal oath forthwith.
But if, Yennefer squinted, in spite of everything, it turns out that Ciri is dead.
She's alive, Krach said firmly. I know that for certain.
How?
You won't want to give it credence.
Try me.
The blood of the queens of Sintra, Krach began, is uncannily bound to the sea. When one of the women of that blood dies, the sea falls into sheer madness. It's said that Ardskellig bewails the daughters of Rhiannon, for the storm is so strong then that the waves, striking from the west, squeeze through crevices and caverns to the east side, and suddenly salt brooks gush from the rock, and the entire island shudders. Simple folk say, see how Ardskellig sobs. Someone has died again. Rhiannon's blood has died. The elder blood. Yennefer was silent. It's not a fairy tale, Krach continued. I've seen it for myself, with my own eyes. 3 times, following the death of Adalia, the soothsayer, following the death of Calanthe, and following the death of Pavetta, Ciri's mother.
Pavetta, Yennefer observed, actually perished during a storm, so it's hard to speak.
Pavetta, Krach interrupted, still deep in thought, did not perish during a storm. The storm began after her death. The sea reacted, as it always does, to the death of one of the Sintran bloodline. I've investigated that matter long enough, and am certain of what I know.
Meaning what?
The ship Pavetta and Duni were sailing on vanished over the infamous Sednar Abyss. It wasn't the first ship to vanish there. You no doubt know that.
Fairy tales. Ships meet with disasters. It's a natural thing.
On Skellige, he interrupted quite firmly. We know enough about ships and sailing to be able to distinguish between natural and unnatural disasters. Ships go down unnaturally over the Sedna Abyss, and not accidentally. That includes the ship Pavetta and Duni were sailing on.
I'm not arguing, the sorceress sighed. Anyway, does that have any meaning to us, after almost 15 years?
It does to me.
The Jarl pursed his lips.
I shall unravel the case. That's only a matter of time. I'll find out. I'll find an explanation. I'll find an explanation to all the enigmas, including the one from the slaughter of Sintra.
What enigma would that be?
When the Nilfgaardians invaded Sintra, he muttered, looking her in the eyes, Calanthe ordered Ciri spirited out of the town. But the town was already aflame. Black cloaks were everywhere. The chances of getting out of the siege were faint. The queen was advised against such a risky business, and it was suggested that Ciri formally capitulate before the hetmans of Nilfgaard, thus saving her life and the Sintran state. In the blazing streets, she would surely and senselessly have died at the hands of the soldierly mob. But the lioness, do you know what, according to eyewitnesses, she said?
No.
It would be better for the girl's blood to flow over the cobbles of Sintra than for it to be defiled. Defiled by what?
Marriage to Emperor Emir, a filthy Nilfgaardian. Jarl, it's late. I begin tomorrow at dawn. I shall inform you of my progress.
I'm counting on it. Good night, Yenna.
What, Krach?
You wouldn't, by any chance, fancy...
No, Jarl. Let bygones be bygones. Good night.
Well, well.
Krach and Krait received his guest with a tilt of his head.
Triss Merigold in person. What a stunning dress, and the fur. Chinchilla, isn't it? I would ask what brings you to Skellige, if I didn't know, but I do.
Wonderful. Triss smiled seductively and neatened her gorgeous chestnut hair. It's wonderful that you know Jarl. It will save us the introduction and the preliminary explanations, and allow us to get to business right away.
What business?
Krach crossed his arms on his chest and glared at the sorceress.
What ought to precede introductions? What explanations are you counting on?
Who do you represent, Triss? In whose name have you come here? King Voltest, whom you served, released you from service with banishment. Although you weren't at fault, he banished you from Temeria. Philippa Eilhart, I've heard, who, along with Dykstra, is presently ruling de facto in Redania, has taken you under her wing. I see that you're repaying for the asylum as well as you can. You don't even flinch at assuming the role of secret agent in order to track down your old friend.
You wrong me, Jarl.
I humbly beg your pardon, if I'm in error. Am I? They were silent for a long while, eyeing each other up mistrustfully. Triss finally snorted, swore and stamped a high heel.
Oh, to hell with it. Let's stop leading each other by the nose. What difference does it make now? Who's serving whom? Who's siding with whom? Who's keeping faith with whom and with what motives? Yennefer's dead. It's still not known where or in whose grasp Ciri is. What's the point of playing at secrets? I didn't sail here as a spy, Krach. I came on my own initiative, as a private individual, driven by concern for Ciri.
Everyone is concerned about Ciri. Lucky girl.
Triss's eyes flashed. I wouldn't sneer at that, particularly in your place.
I beg your pardon?
They said nothing, looking out of the window at the red sun setting beyond the wooded peaks of Spikerug.
Triss Merigold.
Yes, O Jarl?
I invite you to supper. Ah, the cook told me to ask if all sorceresses disdain finely cooked seafood.
Triss did not disdain seafood. On the contrary, she ate twice as much as she had intended, and now began to worry about her waistline, about the 22 inches she was so proud of. She decided to ease her digestion with some white wine, the celebrated Est Est of Toussaint. Like Krach, she drank from a horn. And so, she took up the conversation, Yennefer showed up here on the 19th of August, falling spectacularly from the sky into some fishing nets. You, as a faithful vassal of Sintra, granted her asylum, helped her to build a megascope, with whom and about what she talked, you, of course, don't know. Krach and Crate drank deeply from the horn and suppressed a burp.
I don't know, he smiled craftily. Of course I don't know. How could I, a poor and simple sailor, know anything about the doings of mighty sorceresses?
Sigurdrifa, the priestess of Mother of Freya, let her head drop low, as though Krach and Crate's question had burdened her with a 1,000-pound weight.
She trusted me, Jarl. She muttered barely audibly. She didn't demand of me the swearing of an oath of silence, but she naturally cared about discretion. I really don't know whether...
Modern Sigurdrifer, Krach and Crate interrupted gravely. I'm not asking you to act as an informer. Like you, I support Yennefer. Like you, I desire to find and rescue Ciri. Why? I took blood gaius, a blood oath. Whereas, regarding Yennefer... Concern for her motivates me. She's an extremely proud woman. Even when taking a very great risk, she doesn't stoop to making requests. Therefore, it will be necessary, I can't rule it out, to come to her aid unasked. In order to do that, I need information.
Sigurdrifa cleared her throat. She wore an uneasy expression, and when she began to speak, her voice slightly quavered.
She built that machine of hers. In essence, it's not a machine at all, because there's no mechanism. Just two looking glasses, a black velvet curtain, a box, two lenses, four lamps. Well, and Brisingamen, of course. When she utters the spell, the light from the two lamps falls.
Let's leave out the details.
Who did she communicate with? She spoke to several persons. With... sorcerers. Jarl, I didn't hear everything, but what I heard. Among them are truly wicked people. None wanted to help disinterestedly. They demanded money. They all demanded money.
I know, Krach muttered. The bank informed me of the money orders she issued. A pretty penny my oath is costing me. But money comes and goes. What I spent on Yennefer and Ciri, I shall make good in the Nilfgaardian provinces. But go on, O Mother Sigurdrifer.
Yennefer.
The priestess lowered her head.
Blackmailed some of them.
She gave them to understand she was in possession of compromising information, and in the event of cooperation being declined, she would reveal it to the whole world.
Jarl, she's a clever and essentially good woman, but she doesn't have any scruples. She is ruthless and merciless.
Indeed, as I know. But I don't want to know the details of the blackmail, and I advise you to forget about them as quickly as you can. It's dangerous knowledge. Outsiders shouldn't meddle with fire like that.
I know, Jarl. I owe you obedience, and I believe that your ends justify your means. No one shall learn anything from me, neither a friend in a convivial chat, nor a foe torturing me.
Good, Mordrin Sigadrifer. Very good. What did Yennefer's questions concern, do you recall?
I didn't always overhear nor understand everything, Jarl. They were using jargon that was difficult to grasp. There was often talk of a Vilgefortz.
Of course.
Krach audibly ground his teeth. The priestess glanced at him fearfully.
That they also spoke a lot about elves and about knowing ones, she continued, and about magical portals. There was also mention of the Sednar Abyss. But mainly, it seems to me, it concerned towers.
Towers?
Yes, two. The Tower of the Gull and the Tower of the Swallow.
As I supposed, Triss said, Yennefer began by obtaining the secret report of Radcliffe's commission, which investigated the case of the events on Thaneth. I don't know what news of this affair has reached you here on Skellige. Have you heard of the teleporter in the Tower of the Seagull, and about Radcliffe's commission?
Krach and Krait glanced suspiciously at the sorceress. Neither politics nor culture reach the islands, he grimaced. We're backward.
The Radcliffe commission?
Triss did not deign to pay attention either to his tone nor his expression.
Examined in detail teleportational trails leading from Thaneth. The portal on the island Tor Lara, while it existed, negated all teleportational magic within a considerable radius. But as you certainly know, the Tower of the Gull exploded and disintegrated, making teleportation possible. Most of the participants in the events on Thaneth got off the island using portals they opened.
As a matter of fact, the Jarl smiled, you, for example, flew straight to Brokilon with the Witcher on your back.
Well, I never.
Triss looked him in the eye.
Politics don't reach here. Culture doesn't reach here, but rumours do. But let's leave that for now. We'll return to the work of the Radcliffe Commission. The Commission's task was to determine precisely who teleported from Thaneth and whence. They used so-called synopses, spells capable of reconstructing an image of past events, and then collated the uncovered teleportational tracks with the directions they led to, as a result, ascribing them to the specific individuals who had opened the portals. They were successful in practically all cases, save one. One teleportational trail led nowhere. To be precise, into the sea. To the Sednar Abyss.
Someone, the Jarl guessed at once, teleported onto a ship waiting in a previously agreed location. I just wonder why they went so far. And to such a notorious place. Well, but if a battle axe is hovering over your neck...
Exactly. The Commission also thought of that, and voiced the following conclusion. It was Vilgefortz who, having captured Ciri and having his other escape route cut off, took advantage of a reserve exit. He teleported with the girl to the Sedan Abyss, onto a Nilfgaardian ship waiting there. That, according to the Commission, explains the fact that Ciri was presented at the Imperial Court in Loch Grim on the 10th of July, barely 10 days after the events on Thaneth.
Well, yes, the Jarl squinted. That would explain a lot. On condition, naturally, that the Commission wasn't mistaken.
Indeed.
The sorceress withstood his gaze and even afforded herself a mocking smirk.
Naturally, a double, and not the real Ciri, could just as easily have been presented in Loch Grim. That may also explain a lot.
It doesn't, though, explain one occurrence that the Radcliffe Commission established. So bizarre that, in the report's first version, it was passed over as too improbable. In the report's second, and strictly confidential, version, that occurrence was, nonetheless, presented as a hypothesis.
I've been all ears for some time, Triss.
The Commission's hypothesis reads, the teleporter in the Tower of the Gull was active, was functioning. Someone passed through it, and the energy of the passage was so powerful, the teleporter exploded and was destroyed. Yennefer, Triss continued a moment later, must have found out about it, what the Radcliffe Commission uncovered, what was included in the confidential report. That is, there's a chance, the slightest chance, that Ciri managed to pass safely through the Tor Lara portal, that she eluded Nilfgaard and Vilgefortz.
Where is she then?
I'd like to know that too. It was dreadfully dark. The moon, hidden behind banks of cloud, gave no light at all. But in comparison to the previous nights, there was almost no wind, and for that reason, it was not so cold. The dugout only rocked gently on the slightly rippling water. It smelled like a swamp of decaying weed and eel slime. Somewhere by the bank, a beaver slapped its tail on the water, startling both of them. Ciri was certain that Visigotta had been dozing and the beaver had woken him.
"Go on with the story,"
she said, wiping her nose with a clean part of her sleeve, not yet covered in slime. "Don't sleep. When you doze off, my eyelids droop too. Then the current will take us and we'll wake up on the sea. Go on about these teleporters."
"When you escaped from Thanith," the hermit continued, "you passed through the portal of the Tower of the Gull, Tor Lara, and Geoffrey Monk, probably the greatest authority in the field of teleportation, the author of the work entitled The Magic of the Elder Folk, which is the opus magnum of knowledge about elven teleporters, writes that the Tor Lara portal leads to the Tower of the Swallow, Tor Zireel."
"The teleport from Thanedd was warped," Ciri interrupted. "Perhaps long ago, before it broke, it led to some swallow or other. But now it leads to a desert. That's what we call a chaotic portal. I learned about it."
"I, just imagine, did too," the old man snorted. "I recall much of that wisdom, which is why your story amazes me so much. Some parts of it, particularly the ones that concern teleportation."
"Could you speak more plainly?"
"I could, Ciri, I could. But now it's high time we hauled in the net. It's sure to be full of eels. Ready?"
"Ready."
Ciri spat on her hands and took hold of the gaff. Visigotta grasped the cord, speeding past in the water.
"Let's haul it in. One, two, three. Into the boat. Grab them, Ciri, grab them. Into the basket before they escape."
It was the second night they had rowed the dugout to the river's boggy tributary, set nets and traps for the eels heading in great numbers towards the sea. They returned to the cottage well after midnight, smeared in slime from head to toe, wet and tired as hell. But they didn't go to bed at once. The hall, earmarked for barter, had to be put in crates and sealed securely. Should the eels find the smallest crack, there wouldn't be a single one left the next morning. After the work was done, Visigotta skinned two or three fat eels, chopped them into steaks, coated them in flour, and fried them in a huge frying pan. Then they ate and talked.
"You see, Ciri, one thing still nags at me. I can't forget that right after your recovery, we couldn't agree about the dates, even though the wound on your cheek constituted the most precise of possible calendars. The cut couldn't have been more than 10 hours old, while you insisted that they'd wounded you 4 days earlier. Though I was certain it came down to a simple mistake, I couldn't stop thinking about it. I kept asking myself the question, what happened to those 4 lost days?
So, what do you think happened to them?
I don't know. Well, that's marvellous.
The cat made a long leap
and the mouse it pinned with its claws squeaked shrilly. The tomcat unhurriedly bit through its neck, disemboweled it, and began to eat it with relish. Ciri watched it impassively.
"The Tower of the Gull Teleporter," Visigotha began again, "leads to the Tower of the Swallow. And the Tower of the Swallow..."
The cat ate the entire mouse, leaving the tail for dessert.
"The Tor Lara Teleporter," said Ciri, yawning widely, "is warped and leads to a desert.
I've probably told you that 100 times. That's not the point. I'm talking about something else. That there's a connection between the two teleporters. The Tor Lara portal was warped, I agree. But there is also the Tor Zirael teleporter. If you could reach the Tower of the Swallow, you could teleport back to the Isle of Thanedd. You would be far from the danger threatening you, out of reach of your enemies."
"Ah, that would suit me. There's just one little snag. I have no idea where the Tower of the Swallow is."
"Perhaps I'll find a remedy for that. Do you know, Ciri, what university studies give a person?"
"No. What?"
"The ability to make use of sources."
"I knew I'd find it," Visigotha said proudly. "I searched and searched and... oh, bugger!"
The armful of heavy tomes slipped through his fingers. Grimoires tumbled onto the threshing floor. Leaves fell from their decayed bindings and were strewn around haphazardly.
"What have you found?"
Ciri kneeled beside him and helped him gather up the scattered pages.
"The Tower of the Swallow."
The hermit drove away the tomcat, which had impudently settled on one of the leaves.
"Tor Zirael, help me."
"How dusty it is, and sticky.
Visigotha, what's this? Here in this picture, that man hanging from a tree.
This?"
Visigotha examined the loose leaf.
"A scene from the legend of Heimdall. The hero, Heimdall, hung from the ash of the worlds for 9 days and nights to gain knowledge and power through sacrifice and pain."
"I've dreamed of something like that several times."
Ciri wiped her forehead.
"A man hanging from a tree."
"The engraving fell out of this book here. If you like, you can read more later. But now, the more important thing is... I have it at last. Peregrinations along trails and magical places by Boivid Backhuysen. A book regarded by some as an apocryphal work."
"You mean it's poppycock?"
"Something like that. But there were also those who valued the book. Here, listen. Pox on it. How dark it is."
"There's enough light. You're going blind from old age," said Ciri, with a detached cruelty befitting her age. "Hand it over. I'll read it. Where from?"
From here."
He pointed with a bony finger.
"Read it aloud."
"That old Boivid wrote in weird language. I think Asengard was some castle or other, if I'm not mistaken. But what's this land? Kentlock? I've never heard of any such place. And what's Trefoil?"
"Clover. And I'll tell you about Asengard and the 100 lakes when you finish reading."
For the life of me, barely had the elf Avalach uttered those words than did hurry out from beneath the lake's waters those meagre black birds that had sheltered from the frost the whole winter at the bottom of the depths. For the swallow, as learned men know, does not fly south for the winter in the manner of other birds and return in the spring, but binds itself with its claws in great swarms and sinks to the bottom of the waters, there to spend the whole winter season, and only in the spring does it fly out de profundis from beneath the waters. Howbeit, that bird is not only the symbol of spring and hope, but also the model of unblemished purity, since it never alights on the ground, nor with earthly dirt and filth have any commerce. Let us, though, return to our lake. You would have said that the circling avians dispersed the fog with their wings, for, tandem, a marvellous occult tower unexpectedly emerged from the vapour. And we sighed in awe with one voice, because it seemed to be a tower woven from mist, having fog as its fundamentum, and its top was crowned with the gleam of the aurora, an enchanted,
Aurora Borealis. Indeed, that tower must have been erected using powerful occult arts beyond human ken. The elf Avalach marked our oar and speak. This is Tor Zireel, the Tower of the Swallow. This is the Gate of Worlds and the Threshold of Time. Feast your eyes on this sight, man, for not to everyone nor always is it given. But when asked if we might approach and from proximity gaze on the tower, or propria manu touch it, Avalach laughed. Tor Zireel, he spake, is for you a reverie, and reveries may not be touched. And a good thing it is, he added, for the tower serves only the few chosen, for whom the threshold of time is a gate of hope and rebirth. But for the profane, it is the portal of nightmare. Barely had he uttered those words than the fog fell once more and denied our eyes that enchanted prospect.
The land of 100 lakes, once called Kentloch, Visigotha explained, is called Mil Tracta today. It's a very vast lakeland, bisected by the river Yelena in the northern part of Metina, close to the border with Nazaire and Mag Turga. Boivid Backhuysen writes that they walked towards the lake from the north, from Asengard. But today, Asengard is no more. Only ruins remain, and the nearest town is Neunruith. Boivid counted 400 furlongs from Asengard. Various furlongs have been used, but we'll accept the most popular reckoning, according to which 420 furlongs gives around 50 miles. South of Asengard, which is about 350 miles from us here in Periplut. In other words, there are more or less 300 miles between you and the Tower of the Swallow, Ciri. That's some 2 weeks' riding on your kelpie, in the spring, of course, not now, when the frosts may be upon us in a day or two.
Asengard, which I was reading about, is a ruin today, Ciri murmured, wrinkling her nose pensively.
But I've seen the elven town of Sherwedd in Caedwen with my own eyes. I've been there. People prized out and pillaged everything. They only left bare stone. I bet only stones remain of your Tower of the Swallow. The larger ones, because the smaller ones have probably been stolen, if there was a portal there as well.
Tor Zireel was magical, not visible to everybody, and teleporters are never visible.
True, she admitted, and pondered. The one on Thaneth wasn't. It suddenly appeared on a bare wall. Actually, it appeared just in time because that mage who was chasing me was close by. I could hear him, and then the portal materialized as though I'd summoned it.
I'm certain, Visigotha said softly, that if you reached Tor Zireel, that teleporter would also appear to you, even in the ruins amidst the bare stones. I'm certain you'd manage to find and activate it. And it, I'm certain, would obey your order. For I think, Ciri, that you are the chosen one.
Your hair, Triss, is like fire in the candlelight, and your eyes are like lapis lazuli. Your lips are like coral.
Stop that crack. Are you drunk or what? Pour me some more wine and talk.
What about exactly?
Come off it. About how Yennefer decided to sail to the Sedna Abyss.
How goes it? Tell me, Yennefer.
First of all, you answer my question. Who are the two women I invariably counter when I come to you, and who always give me looks usually reserved for cat shit on the carpet? Who are they?
Are you interested in their formal and legal or actual status?
The latter.
In that case, they're my wives.
I understand. Explain to them, when you get the chance, that bygones are bygones.
I have. Well, women are women. Never mind. Speak, Yennefer. I'm interested in how your work is progressing.
Unfortunately, the sorceress bit her lip. There's scant progress. And time's running out.
It is, the Earl nodded.
and constantly supplying new sensations. I received news from the continent. It ought to interest you. It comes from Visegerd's corps. You know, I hope, who Visegerd is.
The general from Sintra?
The marshal. He commands a corps made up of Sintran emigrants and volunteers within the Temerian army. Enough volunteers from the islands serve there for me to have first-hand news.
And what do you have?
You arrived here in Skellige on the 19th of August, 2 days after the full moon. The same day, the 19th, I mean, Visegerd's corps picked up a group of fugitives during fighting by the Einar. Among them were Geralt and that troubadour friend of his, Dandelion. Quite. Visegerd accused both of spying, imprisoned and perhaps meant to execute them, but the two prisoners ran away and sent some Nilfgaardians, with whom they were reputedly in league, after Visegerd.
Nonsense.
I thought so too, but I can't get it out of my head that the Witcher, in spite of what you think is perhaps carrying out some cunning plan, wanting to rescue Ciri, he's worming his way into Nilfgaard's good graces.
Ciri's not in Nilfgaard. And Geralt isn't carrying out any plans. Planning isn't his strong point. Let's leave it. What's important is that it's already the 26th of August, and I still know too little. Too little to undertake anything. Unless I was to...
She fell silent, staring out of the window, playing with the obsidian star fastened to a black velvet ribbon.
Well, to what? Krach and Krait burst out.
Rather than mocking Geralt, to try using his methods.
I don't understand.
One could try sacrifice, Jarl. Apparently, readiness to make sacrifices can pay off, produce favourable results, if only in the form of the grace of the goddess, who likes and esteems people who sacrifice themselves and suffer for a cause.
I still don't understand, he said, wrinkling his brow. But I don't like what you're saying, Yennefer.
I know. Neither do I. But still, I've gone too far. The tiger may already have heard the kids bleating. That's what I was afraid of, Triss whispered. That's precisely what I was afraid of.
Which means I understood correctly. The muscles of Krachan Krait's jaw worked vigorously. Yennefer knew someone would eavesdrop on the conversations she was conducting using that infernal machine, or that one of her interlocutors would basely betray her.
Or the one and the other.
She knew.
Krach ground his teeth,
but carried on regardless, because it was meant to be bait. Did she intend to be bait herself? Did she pretend to know more than she did in order to provoke the enemy? And she sailed to the Sednar Abyss.
Throwing down the challenge. Provoking. She was taking an awful risk, Krach.
I know. She didn't want to expose any of us to danger, apart from volunteers. So she asked for two longships. I have the two longships you asked for, Alcyone and Tamara, and their crews, naturally. Alcyone will be commanded by Guthlaf, son of Svein. He asked for the honour, as he's taking a liking to you, Yennefer. Tamara will be commanded by Asa Thiazi, a captain in whom I have absolute faith. I almost forgot. My son, Hjalmar Rymouth, will also be in Tamara's crew.
Your son? How old is he?
19.
You started early.
That's the pot calling the kettle black. Hjalmar asked to be added to the crew for personal reasons. I couldn't turn him down.
For personal reasons?
You really don't know that story?
No. Tell me.
Krach and Krait drank from the horn and laughed at his recollections.
Youngsters from Art Skellig, he began, love playing on skates during the winter. They can't wait for the icy weather. The first of them go out in the ice when the lake is barely icebound, so thin it wouldn't support adults. Races are the favourite spot, naturally, to gather speed and hurtle as fast as they can from one side of the lake to the other. Other boys compete at the so-called salmon leap.
They have to jump in their skates over lakeside rocks sticking up from the ice like shark's teeth, like salmon leaping up waterfalls. You choose a suitably long row of rocks like that, take a run up. Ha! I'd jump like that when I was a scrawny kid. Krach and Crete fell into a reverie and smiled slightly. Oh, of course, he continued. Whoever jumps the longest row of rocks wins the competition and then struts around like a peacock. In my day, Yennefer, that honour often fell to your humble servant and present interlocutor. During the time that interests us most, my son, Hjalmar, was the champion. He jumped over stones that none of the other boys dared to, and paraded around with his nose in the air, challenging anyone to try and defeat him. And the challenge was taken up by Ciri, daughter of Pavetter of Sintra. Not even an islander, though she thought of herself as one, since she'd spent more time here than there.
Even after Pavetta's accident? I thought Calanthe had forbidden her from coming here.
You know about that?
He glanced at her keenly.
Indeed, yes. You know a great deal, Yennefer. A great deal. Calanthe's rage and ban didn't last more than 6 months, and then Ciri began to spend her summers and winters here again. She skated like a demon, but to compete at the salmon leap with the lads, and challenge Hjalmar, it was unbelievable.
She leapt, the sorceress guessed.
Yes, she did. The little Sintran half-devil leaped. A real lion cub from the lioness's blood. And Hjalmar, so as not to expose himself to ridicule, had to risk a jump over an even longer row of stones, which she did. He broke a leg, broke an arm, broke 4 ribs and smashed his face up. He'll have a scar for the rest of his life. Hjalmar Rymouth, and his famous betrothed. Ha!
Betrothed?
Didn't you know about that? You know so much, but not that. She visited him when he was lying in bed recovering after his famous leap. She read to him, told him stories, held his little hand. And when someone entered the chamber, they both blushed like poppies. Well, finally, Hjalmar informed me they were betrothed. I almost had an attack of apoplexy. I'll teach you, you rascal. I'll give you a betrothal, but with a rawhide whip. And I was a bit anxious, for I'd seen that the lion cub was hot-headed, that everything about her was reckless, for she was a daredevil, not to say a little maniac. Fortunately, Hjalmar was covered in splints and bandages, so they couldn't do anything stupid.
How old were they then?
He was 15. She almost 15.
I think your fears were a little exaggerated.
Perhaps a little. But Calanthe, whom I had to inform about everything, by no means made light of the matter. I knew she had marriage plans regarding Ciri. I think it concerned the young Tancred Tyson of Tovir, and perhaps the Redanian, Radovid. I can't be certain. But rumours might have harmed the marriage plans, even rumours about innocent kisses or half-innocent caresses. Calanthe took Ciri back to Sintra without a moment's delay. The girl kicked up a row, yelled and sobbed, but nothing helped. There was no arguing with the lioness of Sintra. Afterwards, Hjalmar lay for 2 days with his face turned to the wall and didn't say a word to anyone. As soon as he had recovered, he planned to steal a skiff and sail to Sintra by himself. For that, he was strapped, and he put it behind him. But later...
Krach and Crate went silent, fell into a reverie. Later, the summer came, then the autumn, and the entire Nilfgaardian might struck Sintra's southern wall through the Marnadal stairs, and Hjalmar found another opportunity to become a man. In Marnadal, at the Battle of Sintra and later at the Battle of Sodden, he faced the Blackcloaks valiantly. Later too, when the longships sailed for the Nilfgaardian coasts, Hjalmar avenged his make-believe betrothed with sword in hand, even though people thought she was dead by then. I didn't believe it because those phenomena I told you about didn't occur. Well, and now, when Hjalmar learned of the possible rescue expedition, he volunteered.
Thanks for the story, Krach. It was restful for me to listen. I could forget about my cares.
When do you set off, Yennefer?
In the coming days. Perhaps even tomorrow. It remains to me to perform one more final telecommunication.
Krach and Krait's eyes were like a hawk's. They bored deeply to the very core.
You don't by any chance know Triss Merigold, who Yennefer spoke to that last time before disassembling the infernal machine on the night of the 27th of August? With whom? Or about what?
Triss hid her eyes behind her eyelashes. The beam of light, diffracted by the diamond, animated the surface of the looking glass with a flash. Yennefer extended both hands and intoned a spell. The blinding reflection transformed into a swirl of fog, and an image quickly began to emerge from it. The image of a chamber whose walls were draped with a colourful tapestry. A movement in the window, and an anxious voice.
Who is it? Who's there?
It's me, Triss.
Yennefer, is that you? Oh, gods! How... Where are you?
It isn't important where I am. Don't block, for the image is flickering. And take away the candlestick, it's blinding me.
I've done it, of course.
Though the hour was late, Triss Merigold was not in a negligee or in working clothes. She was wearing an evening gown. As usual, buttoned all the way up to the neck.
May we talk freely?
Of course.
Are you alone?
Yes.
You're lying.
Yennefer, don't trick me, girl.
I know that expression. I've seen more than enough of it. You had one like that when you started sleeping with Geralt behind my back. You put on the identical innocent, whorish little mask then that I see on your face now, and it means the same now as it did then.
Triss blushed, and beside her in the window appeared Philippa Eilhart, dressed in a dark blue men's doublet with silver embroidery.
Bravo, she said. Sharp as usual, acute as usual. As usual, difficult to comprehend and fathom. I'm glad to see you in good health, Yennefer. I'm glad that the crazy teleportation from Monte Calvo didn't end tragically.
Let's assume you are indeed glad, Yennefer grimaced. Although, that's a most bold assumption. But we'll leave it.
Who betrayed me?
Is it important?
Philippa shrugged.
You've now been communicating for 4 days with traitors. With traitors to whom venality and treachery are second nature, and traitors whom you have forced to betray others in turn. One of them has betrayed you. That's the usual course of events. Don't tell me you didn't expect it.
Of course I did, Yennefer snorted. I proved that by contacting you. I didn't have to, did I?
You didn't. Which means you stand to gain from it.
Bravo. Sharp as usual, acute as usual. I'm contacting you to assure you that the secret of your lodge is safe with me. I won't betray you.
Philippa looked at her from beneath lowered eyelashes.
If you expected, she said finally, to buy yourself time, peace and safety with that declaration, you miscalculated. Let's not kid ourselves, Yennefer. By fleeing Monte Calvo, you made a choice. You threw in your lot with one side of the barricade. Whoever's not with the lodge is against it. Now you're trying to beat us to Ciri, and the motives driving you are counter to ours. You're acting against us. You don't want to allow us to use Ciri to serve our political ends. Know, then, that we shall do everything to prevent you using the girl to serve your own sentimental ones.
So it's war, then?
Competition?
Philippa smiled venomously.
Only competition, Yennefer.
Fair and honourable?
You must be joking.
Naturally. Nonetheless, I'd like to present one matter honestly and unambiguously. Banking, of course, on gaining something from it.
By all means.
In the course of the next few days, perhaps even tomorrow, events will occur whose outcome I'm unable to predict. It may turn out that our competition and rivalry will suddenly cease to have any meaning. For a simple reason. There won't be a rival any longer.
Philippa Eilhart narrowed her eyes, which were accented with light blue eyeshadow.
I understand.
Ensure, then, that I posthumously regain my reputation and good name, that I won't be thought of as a traitor and an accomplice of Vilgefortz. I ask that of the lodge. I ask you personally.
Philippa was briefly silent.
I decline your request, she said finally. I'm sorry, but your rehabilitation is not in the interests of the Lodge. Should you die a traitor. To Ciri you shall be a traitor and a criminal, for then it will be easier to manipulate the maid. Before you undertake anything that may prove fatal, Triss suddenly said, leave us something. A will? Something that will allow us to continue, to follow in your footsteps and find Ciri. Surely it's in Ciri's interest, after all. It's about her life. Yennefer, Dykstra has found some tracks. If it's Vilgefortz who has Ciri, a terrible death awaits the girl.
Be quiet, Triss,
Philippa Eilhart barked sharply. There won't be any bargaining or horse trading here. I'll leave you directions, Yennefer said slowly. I'll leave you information about what I found out and what I've undertaken. I'll leave a trail you'll be able to follow, but not for nothing. If you don't want to rehabilitate me in the world's eyes, then to hell with you and the world. But at least rehabilitate me in the eyes of one witcher.
No, Philippa retorted almost immediately. That isn't in the interests of the Lodge either. You shall remain a traitor and a dishonourable sorceress to your witcher too. It isn't in the Lodge's interests to stir up trouble, looking for revenge, and if they have contempt for you, they won't want revenge. Besides, he's probably dead, or will die any day.
Information, Yennefer said hollowly, in exchange for his life. Save him, Philippa.
No, Yennefer.
For it isn't in the interests of the Lodge. Purple fire flashed in the sorceress's eyes. Did you hear, Triss? This is your Lodge. This is its true countenance. These its true concerns. What do you say to that? You are the maid's mentor, almost an older sister, as you yourself said. And Geralt,
don't beguile Triss with romance, Yennefer.
Now Philippa's eyes blazed in turn.
We'll find the maid and rescue her without your help. And if you succeed, thanks a million. You'll help us. You'll save us the bother. You'll snatch her from Vilgefortz's hands. We'll snatch her from yours. And Geralt? Who is Geralt?
Did you hear, Triss? Forgive me, Triss Merigold said hollowly. Forgive me, Yennefer.
Oh no, Triss. Never.
Triss looked at the floor. Krach and Krait's eyes were like a hawk's. The day after the last secret communication, the Jarl of the Isles of Skellige said, one you, Triss Merigold, know nothing about. Yennefer left Skellige, setting a course for the Sednar Abyss. When asked why exactly she was heading there, she looked me in the eye and replied that she intended to find out how natural disasters differ from unnatural ones. She set off with two longships, Tamara and Alcyone, with crews made up entirely of volunteers. That was the 28th of August, 2 weeks ago. I haven't seen her since.
When did you find out?
5 days later, he interrupted quite bluntly. 3 days after the September new moon.
Captain Asa Thiazzi, who was sitting behind the Jarl, was anxious. He licked his lips, shifted around on the bench, and wrung his hands so hard the knuckles cracked. The red sun, finally emerging from the clouds covering the sky, sank slowly over Spikeroch.
Speak, Asa, Krach and Krait ordered.
Asa Thiazzi cleared his throat noisily.
We were making good way, he began. The wind behind us. We were doing a good 12 knots. Then, on the night of the 29th, we espied the lighthouse at Pesha de Mar. We struck out a little westwards so as not to chance on any Nilfgaardians. And at dawn, one day before the September new moon, we reached the region of the Sedna Abyss. Then, the sorceress summoned myself and Guthlaf.
I need volunteers, Yennefer said. Only volunteers. No more than is necessary to steer a longship for a short time. I don't know how many men are needed for that. I'm not an expert. But please, don't leave even one man more on Alcyone than is absolutely necessary. And I repeat,
only volunteers. What I plan to do is very dangerous, more so than a sea battle.
I understand, the old seneschal nodded, and I volunteer first. I, Guthlav, son of Svein, request that honour, madam.
Yennefer looked him long in the eyes. Very well, she said. And I too am honoured.
I also volunteered, said Asa Thiazzi. But Guthlaf disagreed. Someone, he said, must keep command on Tamara. Consequently, 15 men volunteered, including Hjalmar Jarl.
Krach and Crete raised his eyebrows.
How many are needed, Guthlaf? The sorceress repeated. How many are essential? Please reckon it exactly.
The seneschal was silent for some time as he added up.
Eight of us can cope, he said finally. If it's not for long, why, but everyone here is a volunteer. No one's being forced.
Select 8 from that 15, she interrupted sharply. Choose them yourself, and order those selected to transfer to Alcyone. The rest are staying on Tamara.
Aha, I shall choose one of those who stays.
Hjalmar?
No, madam. You can't do that to me. I volunteered and will be at your side. I want to be silent. You're staying on Tamara. That's an order. One more word and I'll have you tied to the mast.
Go on, Isa.
The witch, Guthlaf, and those 8 volunteers boarded Alcyone and sailed for the abyss. We on Tamara hung back according to our orders, but not too far away. But some devilry began with the weather, which had been wonderfully favourable till then.
Aye, I speak truly that it was devilry, for the power was sinister, Jarl. May I be keel-hauled if I lie. Go on.
Where we were, Tamara, the sea was calm, though the wind whistled some, and clouds darkened the horizon, so day almost became night. But where Alcyone was, all hell suddenly broke loose. Hell indeed.
Alcyone's sail suddenly fluttered so violently that they heard the flapping in spite of the distance separating the longships. The sky turned black and the clouds swirled. The sea, which seemed completely calm around Tamara, churned up and foamed white by Alcyone's sides. Someone suddenly yelled. Someone chimed in, and a moment later, everybody was yelling. A cone of black clouds was striking Alcyone, making it bob on the waves like a cork. The ship twisted, spun, its bow and stern rising and falling into the waves. At times, the longship almost completely vanished from sight. At times, they could only see the striped sail.
"It's magic!" bawled someone behind Ace's back. "It's devil magic!"
The whirlpool spun Alcyone around faster and faster. Shields, torn from the sides by centrifugal force, whirred in the air like discs, and splintered oars flew in all directions.
"Reef the sail!" yelled Asa Thiazzi. "To the oars! Row, boys! To the rescue!"
But it was already too late. The sky above Alcyone turned black, and the blackness suddenly exploded in zigzags of lightning, which entwined the longship like a Medusa's tentacles. The clouds, swirling in fantastic shapes, writhed up into a horrendous funnel. The longship spun around with incredible speed. The mast snapped like a match. The torn sail dashed over the breakers like a huge albatross.
"Row, men!"
Over their own yells, over the all-deafening roar of the elements, they nonetheless heard the cries of the men from Alcyone. Cries so extraordinary they made their hair stand on end. And these were old sea dogs, bloodied berserkers, mariners who had seen and heard many things. They dropped the oars, aware of their impotence. They were dumbfounded. They even stopped yelling. Alcyone, still whirling, slowly rose above the waves, and rose higher and higher. They saw the keel, dripping water, covered in shellfish and algae. They saw a black shape, a figure falling into the sea. Then a second, and a third.
"They're jumping!" Asa Thiazzi roared. "Row, men! Don't stop! With all your might! We must row to their aid!"
Alcyone was now a good 100 cubits above the boiling surface of the water. It continued to whirl, an immense spindle dripping with water, entwined in a cobweb of lightning, being dragged into the swirling clouds by an unseen force. Suddenly, an ear-splitting explosion rent the air. Although 15 pairs of oars were pushing Tamara forwards, she suddenly leapt up and flew backwards as if rammed. The deck flew from under Thiazzi's feet. He fell over, banging his forehead on the side. He couldn't stand up by himself. He had to be lifted to his feet. He was dazed. He twisted and shook his head, staggering and mumbling incoherently. The screams of the crew seemed muffled. He went over to the side, tottering like a drunkard, and clung onto the rail.